Arthur, he does as he pleases. That was the other Christopher Cross big hit. You remember that? I think you got to be my age. It is SalesportTalk.com's segment of the week. This is what we do at 9:40. And joining us to co-host, as she usually does on this segment with me, is Karen Lyle. Karen, how you doing?
I have a big smile on my face because I'm talking to you, Rick.
Aw. All right. That's all with five W's, by the way. You wanted to talk about cargo ships. And if you are in the Bay Area like we are, or if you drive across the Bay Bridge, you see tons and tons of cargo ships, and they're coming in everywhere. There's cars being unloaded in Richmond. There's stuff going over towards south of Market. There's San Jose. There's the huge port of Oakland with all those big cranes that were the inspiration for the AT-ATs and Star Wars. What do you want to talk about with cargo ships, Karen?
Well, you know, I was thinking about Zanzibar, actually, this morning. And the original cargo ships were really dhows, which are those lateen rigged boats that you see. And what a lot of people don't think about is that these wooden boats that have been made before we had the tall ships that brought, you know, settlers to America, before any of those types of vessels, these wooden dhows were being made for thousands of years and traveling from the African continent up to India and around through, the Asian Peninsula, and they still have them. So when I was in Zanzibar, and I've been there many times, and I've been sailing on these dhows, I had an opportunity to actually go onto one of these cargo ships, and they are being made by hand still out of teak. They have these old processes for using them, and these days they do usually have some kind of diesel motor, but we don't oftentimes think about where things began and how important cargo was. And so that was one of the things that was on my mind, especially with, you know, the events in the Middle East and the Red Sea at this particular moment in time.
So when you were a kid, you saw Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Dorothy L'Amour, Road to Zanzibar, and you're like, I got to go there.
You know, I didn't actually think about it from that perspective. I ended up going to Zanzibar because I was sailing in the British Virgin Islands, and I met someone who was the operations manager for all of the properties along the Great Migration for a private company that built lodges and so forth when Tanzania became a government. And I just invited him sailing on my boat in the San Francisco Bay. And when he came out here, he invited me to meet the owner of all the properties. And while I was there, they found out that I liked to sail and invited me to go to Zanzibar. And then I had an opportunity to meet sailors in Zanzibar. And that began my, I can say, love affair with the Indian Ocean.
Did you go to Dar es Salaam first or cross over there? Is that the...
No, I went through Kilimanjaro. So that was... And actually, I was on Qatar Airways. I was a guest of Qatar Airways.
I thought Kilimanjaro was a mountain. Is that also a town?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so they have... The mountain is nearby. I mean, you have to go a ways to get there, but there's Kilimanjaro and then the mountain as well. Yes.
All right. Dhow, D-H-O-W. You know, I think a lot of times when we think of those old cargo ships, we think of maybe the, you know, junkets, things like that. How would you describe a dhow in the early days?
Well, the interesting thing about them is they're shaped in all different kinds of ways. So there's not any kind of uniformity. When they build, they have small ones that they use for fishermen, and the cargo ships are usually more heavily constructed and have wood lattice in the holds below to kind of build the structure of the ship. But in the smaller ones, they actually use native woods that are branches to kind of form the shape of the boat. And so they're like, you know, the fork of the branch. And so they'll have all different kinds of shapes in their structure based on that. But basically, usually it's a single sail that billows out in front of the boat. And when they traveled when they travel long distances, you know, and back in the day before we had the cargo ships that we have today, they would travel with the monsoon winds from Africa to India. And then they'd wait until the winds changed, and 6 months later they'd come back. And they would actually sometimes have families on both sides. The traders would have families on both sides of the ocean voyages that they had, because they just traveled by the wind only. Now today the dhows go into ports that the large cargo ships can't go, because they have a really shallow draft, and draft is the, you know, how deep the boat is underneath the water. Like these cargo ships we see coming into the bay, they have like a 35 foot or larger draft. That means how much is below the water. And a lot of ports, especially along in Africa, India, and the islands, you can't have more than maybe 5 feet of water there. And so you could never get a cargo ship, and there's no place to land and take things from the cargo ship to shore. So that's why dhows are still being used today, and there's still people who are doing this ancient art of building them and sailing them. But, you know, I was thinking about pirates too. You know, pirates ever intrigue you, Rick?
Well, I think the Johnny Depp ones do, the Somali ones today, not so much.
And when I was traveling back from Zanzibar, I sat next to an American general who was coming from Somalia. And he said that we got to talking about the non-confidential parts of his job. And he said that the Americans were actually in Somalia training the police force and also helping Somalia set up infrastructure so that they could fight the pirates and be able to establish some kind of order. And one of the things he told me about the Somali pirates is, and the cargo ships that come by, especially from Japan or China, is that the merchants actually already plan on giving a ransom fee to the pirates. And this is something that in some ways encourages pirating, but it also makes it so the cargo ships that plan that can go through. And so that was something that I don't hear often talked about.
Also, by the way, we're speaking with Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com. Maersk, which is a shipping company out of Copenhagen and is a Danish-American. I remember seeing the Maersk headquarters, because you see those ships all the time in San Francisco Bay. Do you know, as an aside, how registries work? Because I know a lot of times when people want to go on a cruise, a lot of times you can't go from one, you can't leave a port and come back to the same port unless you do an international port of call, or these have to be registered by a Norwegian cruise line company. Like, it can't be American. What are some of those weird maritime, like, shipping laws that are, I think a lot of us, it's over our head?
Well, it's usually something that applies to small boats as well as large boats. So I can tell you, for example, the boat that I have, which is a 36 Hunter Vision freestanding rig sailboat, is registered with the United States Coast Guard, and it's a documented vessel. And so all vessels that, and every size, you know, in the big cargo ships that originate from and are owned by U.S. companies are registered with the Coast Guard, and every year we have to renew that. And basically we have to carry that registration aboard. And also, as a recreational private vehicle that's registered, if there was a time of war, my vessel could be conscripted. I could be told that I needed to give up my vessel or use my vessel to help and aid in defense of, you know, or helping, you know. And this is true for every country. They have documentation for the vessel. So it really has to do with who the owner of the boat is and where. And in many of these cases, the ownerships are corporations. And so somebody might be a corporate shareholder that lives in America or Malta or wherever, and they decide that they're going to register in a different country because of tax situations. So anytime that a vessel that is not coming from the country that it's coming into. And in other words, it's coming from outside of that country. They basically have to go through a process of saying hello to the equivalent of our Coast Guard in that country, and provide passports for all of the people who were aboard. So, for example, when I go to the British Virgin Island, I'm going into another country, and I'm on a chartered vessel, and that chartered vessel has a registration from the British Virgin Islands, and I have that document in on my boat. And if I want to go back to the United States, which I did when I went to St. John, I would go hop island hop between the U.S. Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands. I had to use this app to talk to the Border Patrol and list my passport and put all the information and get an interview with someone. And I had to be outside the waters. There was pay attention to whose waters I was in and not come over into the waters without having gone through this screening process. And that's a new streamlined way that they do it based upon, apps and cell phone connectivity. But during the hurricane, after the hurricane in Irma, all of the cell phone towers were down. So you had to go in to a particular port and then, go in and register just like you would come through, when you're landing in an airport, you go through and you go through customs. So you go through kind of a procedure like that. So the cargo vessels have their own process for that. And they also have pilot, like the San Francisco Bar pilots come out and bring them in. But there's a lot of communication that happens between the equivalent of the Coast Guard of the country that is admitting the boat and the boat itself.
I'm 10 times more confused now. But you got to remember that I'm very dumb too. We have
I'm a little geeky on this, I'm afraid.
Okay. We only have about a minute. So I was thinking about how the bridge is so high on these cargo ships because they just stack everything up so high on the deck. And I know they have to load very carefully or they'll cut the ship in half. And then these longshoremen have told me that these crates come from Asia and they open it up and snakes and bugs come out. I mean, it can be kind of gnarly, can't it?
It is. And, down in San Pedro in Southern California, they've had longshoremen there, that have been there since the 1500s. And it's, I know the longshoremen there better than I do here, but they, they are a people who have so much experience with this kind of thing and stories to tell. Maybe I should bring a longshoreman on the show sometime.
Well, just have him not swear, because I know that they say swearing like a longshoreman, right?
Well, it's sailors too. We mind our tongue here.
It's Karen Lyle. You can find out more at sailsporttalk.com. And you can hear her, Penny Mangan, and other guests at 9:40 Pacific time on Tuesdays here on Titillating Sports. Karen, thanks for coming by.
Nice talking to you, Rick.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.